on nutrition and health. Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios, New York City. I'd like to welcome you to this program, and you can watch this program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook. Today, we're going to start with the latest on health and healing, including a 93% of medications contain potential allergens. MIT and Brigham and Women's Hospital say that. That'll be along with a lot of other studies, always from peer-reviewed journals and always respected information that you can count on. Then I'm going to address an issue that I thought everyone in this audience should pay attention to. It's about what they're now saying. If you question vaccines, you could be pro-vaccine. You simply want them spaced differently. You want them, let's say you want your newborn child to be tested first for hepatitis. If the mother doesn't have hepatitis, the baby's not going to have hepatitis. And it's very difficult to be born with hepatitis B. It's extraordinarily rare. So why give a hepatitis B vaccine? Just questioning that, even if you want all the rest of the vaccines, you're saying that anti-vaxxers are killers. That's programmed into Microsoft's Bing auto-suggest. So my question is this. Is this not hate speech? Is this not a form in and of itself of an inquisition? After reading this, I decided to write an in-depth expose juxtaposing the original inquisition of the 12th century and all that that encompassed, who they would accuse, what they would do, how they would elicit people's confessions, and today's modern inquisition, where Wikipedia is the Grand Inquisitor, and all its little sycophantic skeptics are the ones going from topic to topic and saying, you are heretic. You have violated a sacred relationship with the establishment, with the neoliberal community, with Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, people you should respect and admire, and you don't. Therefore, we must punish you. And the New York Times is right in line with the ticket saying, me too. We can kick them down, and then the courageous New York Times will come in and kick them in the face. And that stupid idiot down in Washington, D.C., who owns the Washington Post, Jeff Bozo, and his dancing clowns, everyone in the media are now in the unique privileged position of being a members of the Grand Inquisition, modern day. That's how bad it is. So we're fighting back. Today, you're going to hear from five individuals. I'm going to show you not the full videos, they're too long, but enough so you can get the idea of what we must start to do. And then I will do in its entirety my original in-depth investigative report along with Richard Gale, a different look at the skeptics. We want to know, who are these people? What is the basis for their completely unsupported rants against everything alternative? So that's what we have coming at you, a lot. But we begin with the study led by a team of investigators from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And they found that the vast majority of the most frequently prescribed medications in the United States contain at least one drug capable of causing an adverse reaction. Now, these are known as inactive ingredients. These components are added to improve the taste or shelf life or absorption of other characteristics of a pill. But the authors found that more than 90% of all medications in America tested contained at least one ingredient that can cause allergic or gastrointestinal symptoms in sensitive individuals, like lactose, peanut oil, gluten, chemical dyes. And this was published in Science Translational Medicine. Good news from the University of Eastern Finland. Rye, that's R-Y-E, the grain, is healthy. And thanks to an interplay of microbes. What do I mean? I mean that eating rye comes with a variety of health benefits. A new study from the University of Eastern Finland now shows that both lactic acid bacteria and gut bacteria contribute to the health benefits of rye. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Microbiome. And so no longer do you have to be concerned about rye. Some people didn't want to use it, but it's very good, especially for the how they ferment the dough. And those bacteria also modify bioactive compounds found in rye, and they produce branched-chain amino acids and amino acids containing small peptides, which are known to have impact on insulin metabolism. That's good. And help you with muscle mass. That's even better. From Vanderbilt University comes a study about brains of toddlers resist learning from screens. Now, of course, the newest thing is that you're a parent, you want to introduce your child to everything internet. Well, that's wrong. Like almost everything else you're doing with your child, it's wrong. So back off a moment and look at the actual science. First off, the brains of toddlers resist learning from screens, even video chats, according to this study. But having a parent present can help if you explain things and let the child know what they're learning. Previous research has shown that unlike older children, infants and toddlers need responsive face-to-face encounters with real, live humans in order to learn new information. So that's important because otherwise your children learning just off of the screen could grow up and be like 33% of all millennials. They feel they have no friends, they're lonely and isolated. Yeah, and how did that happen? When you and I were growing up, we were running and playing all day. Our parents didn't have to worry about having us taken into protective custody from child services and our parents arrested, possibly charged or fined for being an unsafe parent or a danger to us because they allowed us to run to a park and play or walk to school unaided. And that's where we've come to overprotecting our children, over micromanaging their lives, their personalities. Their needs are not being met. Our needs for what our children should be as reflection of our belief systems are being forced upon these children. And so the results are millennials and others. So don't allow your children to end up depressed, lonely, and only able to relate to someone who's a friend and being liked. It's also stupid. And we should know better than that. But we don't because it's profitable. And behind all this are people driving the reason why we want the internet of all things. Also, frailty is a medical condition, not an inevitable result of aging. This is from Monash University in Australia. Now, frailty is not simply an adjective associated with old age. It's a medical condition all on its own. I've seen it in people who suffer from calcium and magnesium deficiency, protein deficiency. They're not eating protein 3 times a day. You should. In that great smoothie in the morning, you should have at least 1/3 of your body requirement. Now, for most people, that's not a lot. Depending upon your size and age and your activity, it could be anywhere from 15 to 25 grams of protein in the morning. You throw that plant-based protein into a shake, your body has what it needs to build muscle tissue and hormones, enzymes. But we're not doing that. The protein you get out of cereal in the morning is minimal. So what we need is we need to be supplementing. And then your major meal of the day should be in the early afternoon. And again, you should have protein. If you had some beans and rice, you've gotten another 12 grams of protein right there from those two items. In the early evening, have yourself a light meal. If you need some extra protein, fine. There are plenty of sources of protein. And if nothing else, just make extra shake from the morning and have yourself a drink in the evening. That way you've got it. That's one of the most important things to overcome frailty. Vitamin D3, calcium and magnesium, and amino acids. And this study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Network Open. And they looked at 120,000 people over the age of 60 in 28 countries. And this was the first global study to estimate the likelihood of community-dwelling older adults developing frailty. We don't have to deal with frailty. And by the way, I'm going to be doing, if all goes well, all the communications, all the proposals have been completed. It's being examined by an entire team of medical experts in anti-aging. I intend to start the most comprehensive anti-aging program in world history. It's never been done before. They all agree to that. What I'm about to try has never been done. I won't go into the protocols. I won't go into what I'm trying to reverse in the body and how I'm going to do it in a group of, I'm starting with 10 people, 65 and older, for a three-month period. But as it progresses, as the scientific results come in and the biochemical markers, I'll report on it. So there's no need for anyone to be frail or sick, have dementia, Alzheimer's, memory loss. None of that is necessary. From the University of Eastern Finland, dietary choline, that's C-H-O-L-I-N-E, choline, is associated with a reduced risk of dementia. Now, all the people I counsel who have dementia are on much higher doses than they're recommending here, especially the phosphatidylcholine. Phosphatidylcholine is the choline best used for dementia, by the way. It's linked with an enhanced cognitive performance, and the main dietary source I do not recommend are eggs and meat. I recommend it as a supplement. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And by the way, choline is essential as a nutrient. It's usually occurring in food in various compounds, but it's necessary for the formation of acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter. And that will improve your memory, your cognition, and prevents Alzheimer's disease. So it's very important. Also today, there is 1 in 300 thrives on very early to bed, very early to rise routine. This is according to University of California, San Francisco. What do I mean? I mean a quirk of the body clock that lures people to sleep early, like 8 o'clock, enabling them to greet the new day, maybe around 4 a.m., is much more significant and common than previously believed. This so-called advanced sleep phase, previously believed to be very rare, actually is not rare. It's common. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Sleep. So if you're one of those individuals where your body clock or your circadian rhythm operates on a schedule of earlier hours, earlier to bed, earlier to rise, that's completely normal. And what you're doing is you're prematurely releasing the sleep hormone melatonin, and that shifts the body's temperature. And anyhow, you're still getting your sleep. So if you went to bed at 10 and woke up at 6, you went to bed at 8 and woke up at 4, it's good. Chlorella, C-H-L-O-R-E-L-L-A, chlorella is able to fight fibromyalgia. So the study finally is there to show that this is in the Virginia Commonwealth University, that chlorella, which is a microalgae, and fibromyalgia, which is a very painful condition, that chlorella can relieve fibromyalgia and should be an important part of the therapy. And finally, I'm doing a little less today because I have so much others to get into. 2 sodas a day, 2, that's it, raises your cancer risk. This is from one of the most respected independent institutions in the world, the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. So it's just one more reason to consider cutting back on the soda. Drinking too many sugary drinks on a daily basis has been linked to gallbladder cancer. Well, and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. They studied 70,000 adults, and they found that people who downed 2 or more sodas and with juice or juice that was processed doubled their risk of developing gallbladder cancers compared to people who did not. That's just one more. This is published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. Oh, one last thing. If you increase your polyphenol intake, there's your blueberries, strawberries, apples, onions. It's linked to better heart health. This is Harvard University. So higher intake of polyphenols, like flavonones and anthocyanins from grapes, are associated with reducing your risk of a stroke and a heart attack. That's good news. All right? And that was both at University of East Anglia and Harvard University said that. That's the latest today on health and nutrition. We're going to take a break. And when we come back out of the break, I'm going to read you just a bit of what this says. Then we're going to go to three videos. Again, the full videos, you can go to Progressive Radio Network or PRN.fm and download them and see them in their entirety. And otherwise, this will give you an idea. So we'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world and all the stations that syndicate this program. Thank you very much for being there. And most importantly for all of you, you've been terrific at turning out to very short notice, like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, to some of the demonstrations. And we've had a great turnout where we're working together. It's the concept of the we, the people working against those in power. We have very few resources. They have immense resources financially, control the media, and we don't. But still, we're able to get our message out. This is from Green Med Info, a very good publication in Sayre G. Quote, anti-vaxxers are killers. That's programmed into Microsoft's Bing auto-suggest. I consider it hate speech. Quote, Bing search is neurolinguistically reprogramming its auto-suggestions with specific phrases which target an increasingly marginalized group with what may amount to hate speech, and then it goes in. For example, if you're looking for information on vaccines because your child has been damaged, now you're considered an anti-vaxxer, and therefore you're a killer. We had a person, I guess he was just a person, I don't believe he was an agent provocateur, screaming, you know, really ugly statements to all the demonstrators. And I asked him, debate me. And so I said, tell us your position. And he did. And I just deconstructed each one with facts. And he got very angry and turned around and left. So what I'm doing in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to provide an in-depth article, fully referenced with accurate historical citations to show you why, A, the polio vaccine was not the cure of polio. Measles vaccine did not cure measles. And smallpox vaccine was a complete and total fraud. But we'll give you the actual, accurate history. We do our homework and go way back to the original medical research and show you that Jenner was a fraud. He bought a medical degree. He had a sponsor in Parliament. And he killed his own son. Anyhow, we're going to go into that. I want you to now hear, since vaccine questioning people question vaccine, people want freedom of choice to be informed. This is a doctor. This is a board-certified pediatrician. Absolutely not just a pro-vaccine person, a pro-vaccine person who is extraordinarily arrogant. He'll tell you that. And he's going to tell you how he had an epiphany only after doing his homework. Listen to what he has to say.
Vaccines. I would not have a lot of training in anything in detail unless you become a specialist. I've been reading about vaccines since 2009, about an hour a day. I started reading about vaccines when I saw my patients getting hurt, and that was really hard for me. I didn't want to believe it. In 2003, 3, you all, literally everybody would have hated me. Biggest jerk of a jerk doctor you ever would have met. 2003, biggest ego of any doctor I think that was ever created. And when I walked into my community, I told everybody how blessed you are that I'm here now. And in the next 2 years, I noticed that there was a separation in my patient population. There are patients that were seeing the local chiropractor that were healthier than my other patients, and they were doing some other things for their health other than just using medication for whatever condition they might have. They also had a lower vaccine uptake, and they were healthy, and that was really hard for me to recognize. My partially or unvaccinated patients, and none of us liked them, quite honestly, back then, they were going against their medical doctor's advice, and with the ego that I had, that was really hard to swallow. It took me a couple of years to start reading about vaccines, and the moment I started reading research about vaccines, changed my life forever. I didn't know anything beyond the vaccine information statements, where we find out that vaccines are perfectly safe, you'll become immortal if you vaccinate, and if you don't, all the babies in the world will die. And that's what the CDC wants us to believe, and I understand why they say what they say. When I started reading vaccine inserts, I was blown away at what had been studied or not studied, at the numbers of kids that were studied. A study of 2,000 kids, and then we start vaccinating 4 to 8 to 12 million kids to see what happens. And it changed my life when I saw vaccines having a higher injury rate than what we expected. We had a brand new vaccine that would come out, and we'd start vaccinating kids, and instead of a 1 in a million reaction, we were seeing kids, 1 in 100 being hospitalized, or having to create special rules that if you received a vaccine, you had to lay on the table for 20 minutes because you might pass out as you were leaving our clinic. Really hard for me. I am embarrassed to admit that I was still a vaccine bully, that in my practice we needed certain vaccine rates and you couldn't question my authority, but then I started to make personal decisions for my own children where we wouldn't give my kids any new vaccine that had just been released. A silly rule at the time for what I know now, but I was never going to test vaccines on my kids again. And in 2007 or 8, I forget, I experienced my first regression to autism with one of my patients. Now, you've all heard the same story, that they were born with autism and the doctor just didn't know that they had autism, and it's really hard to pick, no, that's not true. My background's in child development. I was working with kids with special needs. I had a perfectly normal child in my practice until they received his 12-month vaccines. When I walked into the room at a 17-month visit, I literally saw a child I'd never met before. I thought I walked into the wrong room. I stepped out to look to make sure I was in the right room because I did not recognize this child. He had regressed into autism, one of the saddest cases I've ever seen. And hard to admit that I struggled with recognizing that that really happened to my patient. I still know the child today. I'm working with him. He's doing well. But it opened up my eyes. That's when I started reading about vaccines. A few years later, we had a patient die after his shots. They called it a SIDS death at 2 in the afternoon, a few hours after his vaccines. I remember the discussion, and I don't want to violate any confidentiality, so I'm going to be very careful with the words that I use. Sure. The coroner asked the ER doctor, do you think this was related to the vaccines that the child had earlier today? And the doctor said, well, no, it wouldn't have been the vaccines, implying, of course, that vaccines are perfectly safe, so it was marked as a SIDS death, and everybody moved on. That family has peace. It was SIDS. It was unavoidable. It was just a random bad event. But that's when I started reading about vaccines. That led to a transition in who I am today. I also want to humble myself before you. I read about an hour a day about vaccines, and I work with moms in my practice that read 10 hours a day. They know more than I do, and that's amazing. And to all the medical doctors who are watching this, I'm...
By the way, that doctor is an MD and PhD. His PhD is in child development. He's board certified in neurology, and he also talked later on in the film about, by not vaccinating, he was giving up $174,000 in additional income each year because he said every doctor that vaccinates makes a lot of money off the vaccinations. So he was honest. So good for him and that he turned a corner. But he talked about being arrogant and the doctor's right and you're all blessed to have me here. That kind of narcissism pervades the entire medical industrial complex, unfortunately. But I know those doctors didn't start medical school, residency, and internship with that attitude. But it is codified throughout the process of becoming what many consider almost a priest in the relationship they have. It's a sacred relationship. Unfortunately, it's not. So he's telling the truth. So is he now a killer? But based upon the concept going out now, the New York Times, Washington Post wants people arrested and put in jail if they're anti-vaxxers. He's an anti-vaxxer now because he is doing an hour a day of study. And as he said, the women and that he meets are doing 10 hours a day. I'm going to show you four days ago, this rally downtown. I was asked at the last moment, would I come to it? And I told you I was going to be there. About 200 of you showed up, so thank you. We only had a few hours notice. But this is a group, and let me just give the proper group. It's learntherisk.org, learntherisk.org, a group of people who are concerned about the lack of knowledge about vaccine safety and efficacy of doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and people. They were not there to protest. They were not there to rally. They were there to educate. And I had them, I had given them hundreds of my latest documentary on vaccines called Deadly Deception, which you can see for free. Go up and you just click it. Go to prn.fm and it's there and you can click it and watch it. Share it. I have 55 articles that Richard Gill and I have written on vaccines, everything you could ever want to know about vaccines, and deconstructing every one of the pro-vaccine arguments. Here are some of those women and their comments out there.
We're out here today to bring awareness to what is in vaccines and what's going on with the vaccine companies. I would say the most concerning piece of information right now are the significant conflicts of interest that are occurring between the CDC, Big Pharma, the FDA, the HHS. We have to bring awareness to the fact that vaccine companies are not being held liable for their products. 1986, you could no longer sue a vaccine company because of serious vaccine reactions, and they were declared by court to be unavoidably unsafe.
I have a vaccine-injured child. He's 4 years old. His injury came from the vitamin K shot at birth because he has polysorbate 80. This is not in his medical records, and it is not considered a shot either. I only found out about the vitamin K shot after watching multiple testimonies of people who had children injured by the vitamin K shot alone. He has severe autism, and it's in a program that requires year-round intervention, and he just got kicked out of it.
I want to talk particularly about this vaccine coming out, the Gardasil vaccine, which they are going to next mandate in New York for children to go to school. And what I'd like parents to think about is, this is an STD vaccine. It's also there to allegedly prevent cervical cancer. Why does the government care so much about my child getting cervical cancer? This is not the flu. This is not the measles. This is an overstep. All of the vaccines are an overstep. But what it comes down to is it is my body, my choice, my children, my choice. And I want particularly even pro-vaccine parents out there to look up the effects of this vaccine, all the children that it is harming. But beyond that, this is the United States, this is America, this is New York. And children should not be kicked out of school when choices like this are enforced on their families.
I am here because my little boy was severely maimed by a vaccine. And my husband and I were unaware of the nature of how vaccines were made and the ingredients in vaccines. And once we found out what was in vaccines, we realized that it was seriously against our ethical, moral, and religious beliefs to put this into our children's body.
My son Jagger was 18 months old. I took him in for his MMR vaccine, and 20 minutes later, he had a seizure. Over the course of about 20 to 25 weeks, he lost one function a day until he was no longer able to walk, talk, eat, sleep. I called an attorney to find out what my rights were, who's going to be accountable for for my son's injury, and he told me, nobody, that the manufacturer is immune, no pun intended, from liability. So they have a virtually mandatory product, 100% profit, 0% liability. Every other medicine has liability, carries a liability, except for vaccines. Nobody is liable for my son's injury. The attorney told me my husband and I, are liable for my son's injury.
I think what you're doing is terrific. There have been many demonstrations, especially now in California, where the proposition's passed and you have mandatory vaccination with no exemptions, not religious, not philosophical, and very few medical, and even the doctors who are offering medical exemptions are being harassed and they're being investigated. Even lawyers defending patients' rights are being harassed and their license to practice law are being challenged. So understand something, there's a full court press by the entire establishment to attack you. Now, I believe that any reasonable person believes in freedom of choice. Because if you don't have a freedom to choose something with informed consent, then you're just a robot. You're allowing some authority figure, whether it's the FDA or CDC or a state health official, who may know nothing about you and your needs, to dictate what must go in your body. And when they make that a law, A, they're in violation of the Constitution, and then you can't speak. If you want to tell the truth, Google will censor you.
And we're not going to allow it.
Okay, but understand something. A small group like this will change absolutely positively nothing. You have to make the right energy move in order to get your cause become aware to the average person. So what do I suggest? I suggest that you realize the internet at this moment is still your friend. DuckDuckGoGo and some of the other places that are not censoring, because right now Google and Facebook are censoring everything on vaccines. And if you challenge vaccines, no matter what the legitimacy of your challenge, you're considered no better than a domestic terrorist. The Washington Post had an editorial where they want to have people who challenge the safety and efficacy of vaccines arrested and imprisoned. That's how rabid these people are. In my personal opinion, I believe that right now, the United States of America is Germany in 1932.
Yes.
Right? We're at the beginning of a massive fascistic approach. By the way, don't delude yourself that the Democrats or Republicans care about you or your issue. They don't.
Yes.
They care about themselves getting reelected, and your interests are non-existent. So you have to let them know you count, but you only count if you organize. And how do you organize? You could talk with 10,000 people here in this park, and you're not going to change very many minds. The internet.
That there is 27 more minutes of what I'm laying out as a way to go about helping your condition be made public. A damaged child and all those parents there came from being pro-vaccine to learning the truth about vaccine only when their child was sacrificed at the altar of greed and hubris. But there is a way that we can fight back. Now, to help everyone who's concerned, there are at least three more lawsuits that will be filed immediately to try to get the a stay on the mandatory vaccines or your child can't go back to school. That's being done as we speak. My office here, virtually all the people here are working on articles that we're going to share with you. I'll broadcast them, we'll post them, and these are all meant to be shared with other people. In fact, today we've published our third letter to every member of Congress, and this is by one of the new lawyers that we've hired, beseeching them to hold hearings with Wikipedia, so people who've been victimized by Wikipedia can testify, and Wikipedia then, on the record under oath, can be held liable and accountable. And then from there, prosecution. We're producing the research that you can use. As I mentioned, we're doing three articles to show you the lies about polio and smallpox and measles. But we're also doing an article today showing you the politics and profiteering from that 1986 legislation that exempted vaccine manufacturers from being responsible. When you read this, when you hear me broadcasting it, you'll say, my goodness, it's all fraud. That's correct, it's a fraud, which means that we then should get Congress to repeal that act. If you want to stop vaccines, mandatory vaccines, which just became up in Florida, mandatory vaccines yesterday, then you must remove the exemption and make the responsible parties liable. If you make manufacturers liable, mandatory vaccines will stop overnight. In fact, most vaccines will stop, which would be a good thing. So tomorrow I'm going to play two more clips, including a mother sharing a lyrical poem about her child. It's very powerful to listen to. So that's where we're at on that. Now, I began yesterday and only got into a short part of a original in-depth investigative article entitled, which is posted, Medical Skepticism, Today's Scientific Cultural Disease. This is a cult. It is not legitimate science. And Richard Gale and I, working for a long period of time, wanted to know, who are these people who have no background at all, no clinical experience, they haven't done clinical studies, they don't have the degrees in the areas that they are criticizing and saying that are quackery? Well, they're called skeptics. There's not a lot of them, but they control Wikipedia on everything involving both politics. They have a certain disdain for conservatives. They go after them. Well, what about uber liberals like myself and others? Oh, they go after you if you say anything that's anti-establishment. If you go after Big Pharma, Big Pharma has an inordinate amount of control over what goes on. And we've exposed the pay-to-play. We've exposed the lack of any objectivity. And now what we're doing, we're deconstructing all their statements. Everything they've written, we're challenging. You'll see a whole series of these short articles that we're writing, deconstructing the skeptics to show they have no credibility, they have no background, they have no legitimacy, they have extreme biases. We have whistleblowers on our side from inside Wikipedia. We know what we're talking about. So, but I wanted to share something a little deeper with you today, and it's about modern-day skepticism. And it is very powerful. In fact, if you want to know about chiropractic and you go to Google, Google's going to take you to Wikipedia. If you want to know about, let's say, intravenous vitamin C or the use of vitamins, no matter what you want to know about, you'll get something that disparages it, condemns it, considers it no better than lunatic charlatanism, quackery, pseudoscience. Even when the actual scientific peer-reviewed literature in the government's own website, the Library of Medicine, even studies supported by the National Academy of Sciences, our most respected scientific body in America, support vitamin D3 and vitamin C and what it does in the body, they'll say, that's all nonsense. So, boy, you talk about a cognitive disconnect, they have it. But what they do have, for this moment, just this moment, they have power. Because on the internet, primarily on Wikipedia, their ideology, their propaganda is the last word. And mind you, now Google is working with YouTube, which it owns, in order to decide which videos on anything involving a challenge like an alternative cancer approach or a questioning vaccines or GMOs or 5G, they're deciding Wikipedia, they've made Wikipedia the final arbiters of what is true. So if you want to know whether or not a video should be watched or whether it should be removed from the internet altogether, it'll be Wikipedia. The very same skeptics. These individuals do not have the training, the experience. They haven't done studies. They haven't published in the field. They haven't counseled patients. So they're saying, we few, just like this doctor you saw, we few who have no authority legitimately from academia or science, but we're going to judge you who have all the expertise and experience and clinical
the clinical experience, and we're going to say to all of you, with no exceptions, everyone practicing, everyone receiving any form of alternative therapy, you are foolish. You're deluded. So these are the movement celebrity gurus, and they come almost from a religious, fervent perspective that they're entitled saviors. They're here to redeem modern civilization from its past history. They believe that religion, belief in higher beings, belief in consciousness, whatever you wish to call it, is all nonsense. They've reduced everything down to a Newtonian, mathematical, reductionist model. They don't believe in spiritual practices. They don't believe in shamans. They don't believe in faith. No. Anything that promotes a belief in a sense of well-being and psychological wholeness, they say is nonsense. As with so much of our dysfunctional postmodern world, skepticism is therefore a natural outgrowth of the sense of entitlement that those in power hold. Just like how could Katy Perry, how could Tom Cruise, as good as they may be in singing and acting, and they are, how could they put themselves into a position of being invited by Google to a exclusive 200 or 300 people flying in private jets, eating meat, and sailing on David Geffen's yacht, which is $400 million. How could they allow themselves to feel that they are an expert and all the scientists, the environmentalists, the people who live lives in balance with nature, the vegans, the people who are conscious about their purchases and try to intentionally lower their footprint and are humble? It shows you what happens to people when they have been given the power of being a celebrity. So that's where we're at. People who are not qualified, have no solutions that are going to work, are now telling us what we should do. In principle, science-based medicine largely supports evidence-based medicine. And here there are people in this movement who hold themselves out as being the final word. In fact, if they say something about you on Wikipedia, it's locked in perpetuity. You can't change it. But hold on. They say that anybody can edit. That's a lie. You can't. They even say, right, I'm holding in my hand, I hope you're watching today's program so you can see those videos on Progressive Internet Facebook, but right here it says, this is from their own website, Wikipedia. Wikipedia is not a reliable source. Right there. They're saying that about themselves. So where's the cognitive disconnect? They're saying they're not experts because anyone from any background with no credibility at all who could have all forms of psychological problems and biases and agendas can edit anything from people who are honest and legitimate and have no desire to go up on Wikipedia. And now that person who's contributed something substantial to society is being crucified. This is the modern day Inquisition. It seems as though these people have no sound understanding for why a certain alternative therapy either succeeds or fails. Skeptics invoke plausibility as the only necessary criteria to discard outright non-conventional practices like chiropractic, like yoga, like meditation, like transcendental meditation, like acupuncture. No, they'll have none of it. Therefore, to advocate against funding research to investigate any promise they may hold. So their idea is don't fund, don't write about, don't promote, don't interview anyone about any success that has occurred in anything that we don't understand because we say it's not plausible. And if we say acupuncture is not plausible, if we say nurse midwifery is not plausible, then don't fund it. Don't write about it. Don't give it credibility. Don't invite these people before Congress. Don't put them on your television show. And they win. When was the last time you saw Abby Martin or Chris Hedges or Professor Henry Giroux, any of the wonderful, unique, progressive minds being invited on to share their views on anything? Yet relying upon the plausibility argument is simply a lazy person's way to lie to yourself. and skeptics are easily outraged whenever accused of entertaining subjective biases. And that's all Wikipedia is. It's a subjective bias place where, quote, what's it say? Not reliable. Okay, so Wikipedia says it's not reliable. Then why in the world would anyone rely upon it? And so we've outlined repeatedly the subjective biases that taint their evaluation of medical therapies outside of their cherished held belief system. So whenever skeptics are confronted with a scientific or medical narrative that is contrary to their own subjective biases, and in the absence of a scientifically valid argument based upon strong evidence to support skepticism's counter-narrative, the skeptic mind simply fills in the blank with plausibility argument. Plausibility, therefore, is conflated with reality. In one of his many screeds against homeopathy, a Dr. Gorski undertakes his typical long-winded attempt to discredit the evidence that defines plausibility bias, also known as belief bias. It's not surprising, therefore, that science-based medicine's most militant voices convey a brutally amateurish understanding of human psychology. Researchers at the University of British Columbia and Yale University report in their paper, quote, "The curse of knowledge in reasoning about false beliefs," which means that there can be a curse of knowledge bias. So what does that mean in lay language? It means if you have knowledge of something, if you have the wisdom that allowed the knowledge to be applied, if you're able to help someone, if one of the doctors, like, let's say, Dr. Jonathan Wright, for example, if he's able to understand that a person's constant allergies may have something to do not just with the food, but also with the level of their immune response, yeah, and he's able to get them to de-stress and change their immune response, build up their immunity, and know they're no longer as susceptible to allergies, then he has knowledge that he's applying based upon a deeper wisdom, and he gets success. Well, now we have people say, that couldn't happen. When I cured 16 people with full-blown AIDS and kept a single person from dying over 15 years at the Institute of Applied Biology and the Tri-State Healing Center, with a full knowledge of medical doctors coming every day and nurses there and detailed patient records and independent medical journalists like Tony Brown and Earl Caldwell the publisher of the MSM News, Bill Tatum, and getting all of the scientific lab works up, so the before lab viral loads, after viral loads, 16 months later, no viruses, no HIV, instead of someone saying, hey, why don't we go and see what he's doing? He has an open policy, lets people come into his clinics, his classes, to see what he's doing, health professionals. No. Instead it was, oh, he's an AIDS denier, because I said that you're profiteering in a despicable way off those who are suffering from full-blown AIDS. Yeah, I said that. I wrote about it and I proved it. But at the same time, I was helping people with my own protocols. All those people have the curse of knowledge bias. They are biased against knowledge they don't have or not smart enough to understand. That contributes to false beliefs used by even young children. That is, the researchers report, quote, adults' own knowledge of an event's outcome can compromise their ability to reason about another person's belief about that event. The curse of false beliefs are contingent upon the plausibility argument goes to the heart of the science wars between skeptics, materialist views, reductionist views, don't support anything that happens that they don't understand about medical science and advocates non-conventional medical practices. They're against the nutrition, naturopathy, Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine because, in my opinion, they don't understand it because they're biased. When you're biased, you can understand something because your bias immediately closes that mindset. So no matter what the truth is, if the truth resides outside of your bias, then the bias protects your truth, even if your truth to you is a unique personal truth, but it is not a universal truth. We must look for universal truths. It is only universal truths that liberates those who have gotten into wars, those who have been bigoted, prejudiced, misogynist, racist, and biased in the extreme. Because as long as you, your whole identity, your worldview, your economic, let's say, stability, and your acknowledged presence comes from holding a warped, perverse, and wrong-headed view, no one's going to criticize you, because no one inside that biased view criticizes each other. You criticize people on the outside of that view. That's the danger of whose worldview is less narrowly, linearly akin to modern systems theory and the physics of cause and effect. So what some psychologists call the plausibility fallacy is nothing other than being convinced about an irrational assumption that a plausible explanation is final proof. No, your plausible explanation that you don't understand something doesn't supersede everyone else's ability to achieve what you can achieve. It is time that everyone in the entire healing profession, from chiropractics to massage therapists, from psychoanalysts to meditators, from holistic doctors, holistic dentists, stop apologizing to people who are not smart enough or open-minded enough to understand the positive results you've gotten. Their final proof that you're wrong and you should be punished in some way, have your license taken away, or be shamed on Wikipedia, today's modern inquisition. Stop, stand up, and never again bow down to that artifice of the medical scientific paradigm. It is a fraud and has been its entire inception. Aside from exaggerating its belief in the power and value of science, skepticism and the cult of believers it embraces in the biological sciences can more accurately be described as nihilistic skepticism, a trenchant to assert impossibility a priori and to convert reasonable doubts into unreasonable incredulity. When understood in this manner, the skeptics who control Wikipedia and call themselves science-based medicine can be viewed as a kind of skeptical medical imperialism. These are the new medical health neoliberals, an excess of science that muddles its own subjective and biased values with being scientifically factual, when more often than not they're inaccurate or out-and-out fraudulent. Do not schizophrenics also apply their twisted reasoning and logic in order to convince themselves about the truth in their hallucinations? Most of modern medicine's belief system is based upon what would be considered by any reasonable person a gross flaw in their sense and capacity to reason. From the standpoint of quantum physics, perhaps the gold standard of the modern hard sciences, implausibility is never a certainty, and not a yardstick to banish and ignore something that might only have a slight possibility of being true. In physics, it is always worth pursuing further. But rules of proof in skepticism do not follow sound scientific inquiry. It is not surprising, therefore, to find that most militant skeptics, aside from Caltech astrophysicist Sean Carroll, hold professions in the life sciences. Richard Dawkins, who I find is just deplorably inadequate intellectually, he's a raving atheist, is an evolutionary biologist. Sam Harris is a neuroscientist. Jerry Coyne and P.Z. Meyer are biologists. Daniel Dennett and Steve Pinker are cognitive scientists and philosophers. Paul Offit, Ben Goldacre, Stephen Barrett, and most of the active members of the science-based medicine cult are practicing medical physicians. We can review a case of applying the skepticism's own plausibility criteria to a medical legal decision that they have fervently disapproved of. It is an excellent example of how skeptics' irrational belief, in fact, trump rational plausibility. Skeptics and pro-vaccine advocates alike were appalled at the U.S. Court of Federal Claims' August 2007 decision to award damages for vaccine-induced autism to the family of Hannah Poling, a 19-month-old toddler who received five vaccines during a single pediatrician's visit. Prior to the case, the court's rulings under the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program relied solely upon, quote, predominance of evidence and for assessing causation of vaccine injuries. In other words, subjective testimonies, for example, by the parents of vaccine-injured children were excluded from the evidence. So if a parent said my child was completely normal and then got the vaccines and then went into this dark place. Not allowed. Not allowed. But what if the parent was a medical doctor? What if the parent was a professor of pediatrics? Not allowed. So the court's conclusion that it's biologically plausible that vaccines and their toxic ingredients can trigger adverse conditions leading to autism. This was the court's ruling regarding Henning Poling. To further appreciate skepticism's culture, we might wish to consider the words and writings of former skeptic who have turned against the movement and the new atheism, which popular skeptic organizations, including science-based medicine, have aligned themselves. P.Z. Myers, a biologist at the University of Minnesota, has a reputation for being one of the more belligerent militant celebrities in the skeptic movement. Myers, along with skeptic Jerry Coney and astrophysicist Sean Carroll, were largely responsible for the censoring of biologist Rupert Sheldrake and the historian Graham Hancock from TED Talks. I won't watch TED Talk anymore as of now because they're not allowing anyone on there to talk about vaccines or de-aging or GMO or health issues. That's how much power the industry has on who talks at a TED Talk. In any case, however, even the skeptic movement has become too much for Myers. In his public statement on Free Thought blogs to announce his resignation from the movement, he wrote, quote, "It is clear that scientific skepticism is simply a crippled, buggered version of science with special exemptions to set certain subjects outside of the bounds of its purview. Skepticism has no sacred cows," writes Meyer. Quote, "I was also annoyed by the skeptic movement's appropriation of the term scientific all over the place, except that its so-called science doesn't make use of accumulated prior knowledge that abandons the concept of the null hypothesis, the assumption that there is no relationship between variables in a population selected for statistical data collection, and so many narrowly defines what it will accept as evidence that it actively excludes huge domains of knowledge. It's toothless science that fetishizes consumer over understanding," end quote. In effect, Myers is accusing the skeptics of, quote, "false belief reasoning, the curse of their perception of plausibility." And an evolutionary biologist, Massimino Pigliucci, and a philosopher now teaching at City College New York, is a former prominent skeptic and columnist for the Skeptical Inquiry magazine. And I'll conclude today by saying what he said, quote, skeptic and atheistic movements. He knows that the movement, quote, has become a somewhat inhospitable environment for philosophical dialogue. Quote, it worships celebrities who are often intellectual dilettantes, or at the very least have a tendency to talk about things of which they manifestly know very little. He also accused the movement of being saturated with, quote, groupthink and narcissistic regard for its own intellectual stubbornness. Quote, that is trumped only by religious fundamentalists, end quote. And finally, he identifies a fundamental problem that we too have encountered in skeptic websites and blogs, notably Wikipedia, which is an atmosphere of, quote, public shaming and other vicious social networking practices anytime someone says something that doesn't fit their own opinions, all the while, of course, claiming to protect free speech at all costs. That's all the time we have today. You can read the full article and share it with everyone. The articles we have are meant for you as tools for change, to fight for your freedoms, because as you can see, the speed at which we are losing our freedoms has accelerated to warp speed. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening and watching. Have a nice day.